Roughly Speaking with Dan Rogics is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at 6080 Falls Road, located at the intersection of Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy stocks a wide selection of books covering Baltimore and the Chesapeake Bay region, many by local authors. More information can be found at theivybookshop.com or by calling 410-377-2966.
I grew up in West Baltimore. I was raised by a single mom. Around that time, I was, selling a little drugs, selling a little weed and a little bit of coke. I just was, running around like a little lost, but one day I wound up getting into an argument with a guy and his friend, and one thing led to another, and I wound up, getting charged with that guy's murder and the other guy's attempted murder. You just sit there, you take a look around, and you start feeling that frustration, how the F I get here? You either gonna keep doing the things that you was doing that put you in that place, or you gonna try to find something to do to start digging your way out?
That's the voice of Curtis Williams, a 35-year-old Baltimore man who recently returned home from prison after spending half his life there. I'm Dan Rodericks of the Baltimore Sun. This is Roughly Speaking. Today's episode, episode 400, augments my column for Sunday, June 17th. It's the story of a man who, as a teenager, committed murder and is now back home after earning parole, looking for a new start. And that's a tall order for Curtis Williams, who was 17 years old when he killed a 19-year-old named Kevin Grayson during a 3 a.m. argument in East Baltimore in February 2001. As he has already learned, and as any of us might expect, having murder on your record makes finding a job extra tough. Curtis Williams is among hundreds, indeed thousands, of men who face the challenge of finding employment after prison. But the murder conviction makes it even harder. In this episode of the Roughly Speaking podcast, Curtis Williams explains what he did 17 years ago, how he resolved to get on a better path while in isolation in prison, how little preparation he had for reentry when it finally came, and what his life has been like in the 4 months since the Maryland Parole Commission concluded that he had served a sufficient amount of his sentence and had made significant personal progress. Curtis Williams came here to the Sun for the interview, dressed in a shirt and tie and with a briefcase. He points out that he is not the first, and probably won't be the last, Baltimore juvenile to commit murder, go away to prison, and finish growing up there.
I grew up in West Baltimore. I was raised by a single mom. I have brothers and sisters. Just West Baltimore, North Avenue, North Pulaski, North and Warwick. It's all the same neighborhood to me, for real.
How many siblings did you have?
Well, I actually have three brothers and one sister, but, my mother has her kids, my father has his kids, so.
Did you know your father?
Yes.
How well did you know him?
I know him fairly well. I haven't seen him in a long time, but I know him.
As you were growing up, did you have experiences with your father?
Yeah, my father, he was a pretty good daddy. He had his issues, some little bit of substance abuse, alcohol stuff, but yeah, he was a good father.
He was around.
Yeah, he was around.
Where'd you go to school, Curtis?
Elementary school. I went to Calvin Rodwell and Robert W. Coleman. Middle school, I went to LaMelle. And high school, I went to Carver Vocational Technical High School, and I also went to Harbor City.
How'd you like school?
It was okay, but it wasn't too challenging.
It wasn't too challenging?
No.
So elementary, middle school, it was a breeze for you? Or what do you mean it wasn't challenging?
I'm kind of intelligent. I was in GATE and all that type stuff in school, and GATE is what they call gifted and talented education. So
right.
My just character, if it's not challenging, I don't show too much interest in. When I knew how to first start a school, I already knew how to read and do other stuff, so.
Really?
It's just me being just a little smarter than I should be.
Is that something you were aware of at the time, or is that something you're looking back on and realizing?
A little of both. Like, I wasn't aware as much at the time, but everybody used to be like, oh, you smart, boy, he's smart, he's intelligent. But looking back on it now, it was like, that was why I used to do some of the acting out I used to do, because I wasn't challenged.
You were bored.
Yeah, I was bored.
And was that true all through high school? What about at Carver?
That too, but I was more like interested in like girls and, you know, smoking weed and all that type stuff.
Mm-hmm. What happened to you when you were a teenager, though? Why did you go to the street?
Like, it was...
You were bored with school? You told me that. But, mm-hmm. You know, taking a chance on getting arrested, getting shot by being in the drug world, why did you do that? What was the allure of it? Was it cool? Was there a lot of money? What was it, Curtis?
It was a little bit of everything. Like I'm the youngest of all my siblings, so I can, you know, be out in the street, be out in the neighborhood, be around certain people and certain friends. And I was, like, smoking weed at the time. I had other people that was a little older than us that probably was selling stuff. And, you know, you see them. You see how they is with their dirt bikes. You see the cars. You see the girls. You just see by them having the money and stuff, you just see the change. You see the difference. Like, yeah, you got a couple dollars. You just see how people respond to them. And like I said, I always was fortunate. I was okay, but it could have been better. It was a greed thing, so it looked it easy. Like, man, I could go out here, come out here with my little 100 bags of weed, with my little pills, whatever. That ain't nothing. You know, you get the first couple of them out the way. You get the first one sold. I ain't get caught. The day was a good day. Next thing you know, you're doing it full time, and you hypnotize. It's hypnotizing, right? It's a peer pressure thing. You might got a friend. His mother probably might not be as fortunate. His mother probably getting high or doing this. Or his father getting high. Or he probably won't even have a mother or father. He out there because he ain't got no choice. But this your best friend. You see him doing some shit. I'm out here too. It's easy.
Were you ever surprised that people could keep coming up with the money to buy drugs?
No, because I didn't see how they do it sometimes. Like, I didn't see it. Like, of course, you got certain females, they go out there, you know, prostitute themselves or, you know, steal or do other things, go to, you know, stores, boost clothes. You got some of the guys, they go in vacant houses, steal pipes. They got a lot of little ways they get little day money.
So what happened when you were 17? That was a big year in your life. Something terrible happened.
Yeah.
What happened, Curtis?
Around that time, I was, you know, selling a little drugs, selling a little weed and a little bit of coke. And I just was, you know, running around like a little lost. But in the process of all that, like, one day I wound up getting into an argument with a guy and his friend, and one thing led to another, and I wound up, you know, getting charged with that guy's murder and the other guy's attempted murder.
What was the argument about?
Just some nonsense. It actually, like, started over him, like, making, like, noise next to, like, where we used to sell our little drugs at and stuff. But one thing led to another, and it just, like, snowballed out of control.
Were you competitors selling drugs?
No, we weren't competitors. Like, I actually didn't know the guy. Like, no, it was a stash house in my era, and guy bust a bottle on the side of your building. He's like, damn, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. Like, you gonna make the police come around. Somebody call the police, you gonna make my spot hot. Mm-hmm. So I went outside more on that tip, but it was still the wrong way. Like, maybe my tone of voice and the words I used. So I aggravated the guy. He said some, you know, some nonsense back, and one thing led to another. And
the reason I ask is because, you know, we have a lot of shootings and killings in Baltimore.
Yes.
Especially the last 3 years.
Yes, unfortunately.
And I scratch your head and you wonder, like, what's that all about? How did this happen? Why is there so much killing? Is it over drug territory? Is it disputes? Is it one guy disrespecting another? Is it over a woman? Because it's usually between men or boys.
Yes.
And in this case, it sounds like...
My case, it was more one guy disrespecting another.
Your territory, where you were selling drugs?
Yeah.
So was it near your house where you grew up?
No.
So how did you know that he smashed a bottle against the building at 3 o'clock in the morning. You were out selling drugs?
Yeah, well, I actually was in the building. Like, the building was actually like the corner building. So I actually was there.
You were actually there. That was your stash place.
Yeah, I actually like heard it. Like, gling, like, damn, man, what is you doing?
Was it in the summer?
No.
So it was a school night or with a weekend?
It was a school night.
All right. So you weren't going to school very much in those days?
No.
Yeah. You were 17.
Actually, I was in the GD class at the time, but like I had got expelled from school like by that time.
Oh, really? What age were you expelled at? 15, 16?
About 16, 17.
So they required you to work on your GED?
No, like I was put out of all Baltimore public schools, and then when I was going to Harbor City, like I wound up missing too many days and they dropped me off roll, and I had wound up catching like a drug charge or something. And when I went to court, the juvenile justice judge basically said, look, we want you to get back in school. You old enough to get a job.
I get you.
So
this was a requirement of the juvenile court.
Yes. So I was in the GD class.
Up until then, Curtis, are all your offenses drug related and juvenile?
Yeah, pretty much, other than maybe like a disorderly conduct or two.
Did you shoot this guy?
Yes.
Did he draw a weapon on you, or were you just pissed off and you shot him?
He didn't draw a weapon, but his friend kind of played like he had one.
So you shot him?
Yeah.
Were you arrested right away?
No, I actually like surrendered to the police a couple days later.
You'd already sort of dropped off of school, but you were working on a GED.
Yeah.
But you thought, life is selling drugs. Right now, the best thing I can do with my life is sell drugs. And this guy was disrespecting my place where I sell drugs.
Yeah, that's basically all it was.
How did you get that gun?
I'm from the streets. This is Baltimore City. Like, I had access to guns. It's like, I had guns maybe since I was in middle school, so.
Who would provide you with a gun? Did you have to buy one, or did someone give you one?
It's probably a little bit of both. Like, the average person can get some guns from a family member, maybe a actual, like, addict, depending on what drug they on. They might come around the block with a gun. Hey, I got this for a few pills. Like, It's not hard to get a gun in Baltimore City.
Do you remember specifically how you got the one that you used?
I think I actually like bought that off a friend who stole it off another friend somewhere off of that way. I'm not actually sure.
At the moment you fired your gun, this guy went down. Did you shoot him more than one time?
No, only shot him one time.
He died right away?
No, but yeah, he died soon after.
What happened to the other guy? Did he run away?
I shot the first guy and was getting around the corner. And I seen the other guy car and he turned down a one-way street. All I know is he turned down a one-way street. I'm thinking this guy about to. I just shot his friend. I'm thinking he about to shoot at me.
Right.
I shoots his car. Long story short, I catch his attempt murder, but in my paperwork.
You shot at his car?
Yeah, I shot his car all up and stuff. And in my paperwork, I noticed it when I like ran away that night. Like, the police was, like, right around the corner, like, where he had just came off the down the one-way street from. But the story was he was taking the police around to the other guy that I had shot.
How did you feel that night?
Well, that night, I kind of, like, tried to brush it off that night. Like, I just went home and went to sleep. Yeah, I just tried to, like, put it in the back of my mind.
Were you in your mother's house?
Like, when I had my home, yeah.
And when you decided to give yourself up, had you told anybody what happened, or did you keep it all to yourself?
I had told a few people maybe, like, that night before. Like, I told the people that mattered. I told my mom the night before.
What did your mom say?
And she just was, like, at a loss for words, you know. It was, like, a lot of crying going on, a lot of, questions at the moment, because it happened so fast. Even on my part, it happened so fast. It was like, why did I do what I did? What happened? It was like just a lot of questions that was like circulating. And at the time, Like, I got locked up 2 days after it happened, so.
Because you gave yourself up?
Yeah.
What, did you go to the Western District?
No, I had actually, like, went down my lawyer's office. Like, my lawyer's office used to be not too far from here. And, yeah, the officers, the homicide detectives came and grabbed me from his office.
Why did you give yourself up? Because is it possible you would have got away with it?
It's possible, but it wouldn't have been likely. Like, somebody would have told, and they was already, like, close looking for me anyway. And, like, the police had used, like, little things to identify me. So it would have only been a matter of time. There wasn't no point in running.
And the other guy was around, right? The other guy would have been a witness.
Yeah.
He knew who you were?
Yeah. Well, he didn't know who I was, but I guess he knew of me or knew who my family was.
Did you have a street name?
Like, my street name is my name. It's Kurt. Lil Kurt. Yeah.
Little Kurt?
Yeah, just Lil Kurt.
So you gave yourself up and they charged you with murder?
Yeah, murder and attempt murder.
And you were 17 and you know this was not going to be a juvenile court thing.
Not at all.
Adult trial. Did you have a trial or did you plead guilty?
I pled guilty.
Do you remember who the judge was?
David Ross.
And what was your sentence?
30 years for my murder, 20 years fully suspended consecutive for my attempt murder.
30 years?
Yeah, with 2 years suspended, which gives me 28 years for my murder.
Ah.
And 20 years fully suspended consecutive for my attempt murder. Basically, it's 50 years all suspended, but 28 years.
I don't want to spend a lot of time on your prison life, but I had a few questions about it. By the time you're in prison, you're still 17?
No, I was 18 already.
You turned 18?
Yeah, I turned 18 while I was over the city jail.
What was it like actually being in a prison at the age of 18?
Oh, man, like, it's like a whole different world. It's like a different set of rules, different way you gotta, like, even have your perspective on your life. It's like everything in the free world just got flipped, turned upside down. Like, everything is the opposite now. Like, you can't walk with certain people. You can't, I guess, talk to certain people. It's like...
Were you scared?
Well, somewhat, but not really. Like, everybody has their fears when they walking into a prison and into a jail, but it wasn't a scared of, oh, I'm scared of this gang, or I'm scared of this person, or I'm scared this gonna happen. It's just the apprehensiveness of, okay, this is a new environment, and I ain't never been here before. I never been, had to act like this before.
Well, you were selling drugs, so you were dealing with people who were in the sort of criminal world.
Yeah.
But you could go to home to your mother's house.
Exactly. Like, I still was a kid.
Yeah.
Prison, if you got a problem, it's going to get settled right then and there. You can't let things fester. Like, you liable to, like, get in an argument with a guy, and you think, okay, it'll just blow over and cool off. Like, you might come out your cell and wind up getting a knife stuck in your back for nothing.
Did you ever experience any violence? Were you ever a victim of violence in prison?
No, not necessarily. Like, I never been stabbed, and I've gotten to my fights and stuff.
You did?
Yes. I wasn't necessarily in no gang. I'm not affiliated. Like, I have friends. I have people who I deal with. Like when I was in prison, I didn't follow the rules 100%. Like, I've also had, sold a little bit of drugs in prison, and I didn't have my knives. I had my fights and, you know, smoke my little weed and stuff in prison over the years as I was in there. But it's gangs everywhere. And I have friends
did you join a gang?
No, fortunately, no. But I also have friends and I'm good as in a gang. I just don't have to actually legitimately be in a gang to say, okay, I'm
so
a gang member.
So you had some friends in prison who were in gangs. Did they kind of look out for you?
Yeah, they looked out for me. I looked out for them. It's like, it's really like a friendship thing. It's a bond thing. Like, once you realize this the person this is his character, he don't have no type of stains on his reputation or anything. Yeah, he our guy. That's all it really be.
You said you were in fights more than one?
Yeah, I've been in fights in prison and all that stuff.
The first couple years, or did this go on for many years? You were in prison for 17 years?
Yeah, 17 years.
So during that time, if you look at those 17 years, the fights that you were in, were they concentrated in the beginning, or was it every year for 17 years? Some kind of conflict?
Oh, no, most of it was in the beginning. Like I actually had caught, new charges and stuff, and, most of my trouble I had in prison was just my first 3-4 years in.
Because I'm wondering about your parole. So we get to, you move around to different prisons. The years go by. Curtis, you turn 19, you turn 20. You spend your 20s in prison. So when we get to parole, does this issue of having been in fights come up at parole hearings?
Yeah. Around about 2003, I actually had got to fighting the officers. Like, it was a long story, but the officer put his hands on me first, and we got to fighting, and they wound up jumping on me.
But this is on your record, then?
Yeah, this is on my record.
So I'm wondering, what happens when you go for parole? Did they bring this up?
Yeah, they asked me. That was, one of the first things they asked me, because I actually was rebooked on those charges. Like, I have two new assault charges on my record. Mm-hmm. And, when I went up, they asked, but they also see, you notice I'm a law guy. Like, I ain't no idiot, I don't have no business trying to swing on no officer or nothing like that. So I want to say they took that into consideration, but they also took in consideration, where I was at. I was in Patuxent, and, Patuxent, it was real good at the time, because I was a youth offender, so I supposed to did a youth program. They make that program seem like it's the jewel of the correctional system when it's just a scam. Fortunately, I didn't stay down there long. Neither time I was down there, but...
Why do you call it a scam, Curtis?
Because, they claim they try to help rehabilitate you or mental health issues. They try to address that maybe has something to do with you, getting your crime. But you go sentence a person to, 50 years or something and then claim, okay, they got a program down here at this institution. Man, you might can go down there with your 50-year sentence. You might do about 10 years and be home. You tell somebody that, you just lied to them. No matter how much time you got with a violent crime, you got to do half your sentence. So no matter what the statute say about Patuxent, no matter what the statute say about this, you're going to do whatever amount of time that you got.
So at Patuxent, you were given the impression that if you went there, and you what had
basically stayed out of trouble and did the youth program,
you wouldn't have to serve half of your time.
Yeah, they basically just said I probably would have been out
five years. That wasn't true.
Yeah, that wasn't true at all.
Did you get group therapy? Did you have counseling? Did you sit in circles and talk about your lives? Or?
That's the Patuxent style.
Yeah. Did you do any of that?
Well, they sent me back down there because, the first time I was down there, I screwed up. I supposed to did the youth program, screwed up, got put out of jail. It took them 9 years to shut me back. So we started the process, and then they was like, "Well, you ineligible. We don't want you down here." But yeah, I had an opportunity to sit in a couple groups and talk about my crime, talk about my past and stuff. But
so my question is, when did you gain some insight into Curtis Williams? It sounds like you were an angry teenager with a gun, and then still angry when you were in prison or given to temper outbursts. When did you gain some insight into the kind of man you were?
I want to say it was around about 2003, because around that was around the time I got into the trouble with the officers and stuff. So I wound up with a year on lockup in solitary. So it was basically my time in a hole. And plus, I was fortunately went down to Maryland House of Correctional Annex, and their lockup is single cell. So I'm was basically in the cell by myself for almost a year. Basically just, sit there, get my thoughts together. And it's that was my rock bottom. That's where I really realized, how far I felt. Here I am about 2-3 years in prison now. I got 28 years. I'm on lockup for a year. I can't do nothing. I can't help my family. My mom need assistance of her. Family members could use me. I want my freedom. I want to be home. So I sat back and you know, you just sit there, you take a look around, and you start feeling that frustration, like, man, like, how the F I get here? So it's like, you either going to keep doing the things that you was doing that put you in that place, or you going to try to find something to do to start digging your way out. And that's kind of what I did. I started reading. I just started reading a lot about business and a lot about...
You mean books in the library?
Yeah, books in the library. I purchased a lot of my own books. I just started reading a lot. Like, I started working out. I started, like, getting to myself. Like, I just started, like, worrying about Kurt rather than what's going on here, what's going on here, or what's the next law of major function we going to have. Or I stopped worrying about a lot of that stuff.
So it actually helped you being in solitary?
Yeah, that's like one of the best things to happen. Maybe not at first, but yeah, it was the best thing to happen.
So you spent a year there.
Yeah, about a year.
And when you came out of that, did you have a better attitude, or certainly a different attitude about your time in prison, what you were going to do with it?
When I came out of there, it was like I had like a more focus. We had a little saying while I was behind the door. That's what we say in jail.
Mm-hmm. When was your first parole hearing? Do you remember what year it was?
2014.
And they denied you. You came back in 2 years.
Yeah.
So in 2016, you got another hearing?
Yeah.
And what was that like, Curtis? Did they ask you questions about your crime, about crimes in prison?
Yeah, they ask you everything. They ask you about your crimes. They look at your record, see what you did in prison, like your tickets that you caught, any certificate, any progress that you did. Like, I did everything. Like, I got my good in prison, I got my bad. Fortunately for me, my good heavily outweighs the bad, because, like, while I was in prison, I got my GED, I got shops, I learned other things, I got other programs.
What skills and trades did you learn in prison?
I have technical certifications in graphic design, but I also, this just what I did for myself, like I learned accounting, like I actually have an accounting certificate. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm actually like a self-taught financial analyst now. Like, that's what I'm really out here trying to pursue at the moment. Yeah, I learned a lot in prison. I read a lot of books.
What did you say at your second parole hearing on your own behalf? Remember when they asked you to speak? I'm just curious. Like, say we are in a parole hearing right now again, if you could recreate that. What did you say to the commissioners?
I let them know that, you know, I've been in prison half my life. Like, I recently just turned 35, and basically let them know, like, some of my experiences, let them know how it was in the beginning. Like, this is my first time actually, like, being in jail overnight and, like, walking on these tears and being experienced a lot. And the time that I've been in, the people that I've been around, they can see that I still wasn't flagged on my record. I maintained the prison job for a long time. Like, I mainly used to work in the kitchens and stuff in prison. And, you know, I had a nice bit of good time and stuff stacked up. Yeah, like, I had a lot of certificates. And, like, long story short, I look at, like, my time in prison as being productive. And it's been, it helped me. And like, considering where I was going and where I was hit, when I was home, like, I was already playing with guns. I was already shooting guns and selling drugs and
you
stuff.
You might have,
like,
been dead.
Exactly.
In a couple of years or less.
Yeah, like, my best friends, like, the two best friends I had in this world, like, both of them dead now. So it was like, I'm grateful for my time in prison, because it helped preserve me. It helped me get my mind back in order. It helped me really tap into what I needed to tap into within myself to make sure that my future is going to be okay and make sure that I can survive out here.
What kind of advice, counseling, or help did you get before you got out of prison about coming out? Did anybody sit with you and say, where are you going to go? Where are you going to live? What kind of job are you going to have? How are you going to find a job? Did anybody go over that with you?
No. Like, we had like a group in jail about that, maybe like in 2013.
So when you were actually released from prison, first of all, where were you released from?
I was released from Western Correctional Institution, Cumberland, Maryland, actually downtown, DOC.
You were in Cumberland, and they sent you to the...
The diagnostic building.
Diagnostic building. And then you were released from there?
Yeah.
With what? What were in your hands and your pockets when you came out of prison?
an envelope, a medical slip, and like $50. Basically, a little manila envelope, and it was a medical slip, my parole papers.
Where did you go?
Went home, stopped at the Rite Aid, got me some hygiene items, and my house is not too far from there. I went right around here.
What is it like being home?
Oh, man, the first day, like, I actually had to pinch myself while I was walking down the street. Like, you know, you in prison, you have so many dreams that you actually home, and you wake up in four walls. It's like, when you really get there, it's like a whole nother world. Like, it felt good, but at the same time, it ain't kick all the way in yet. It took a few days for me to really, like, okay, I'm really out here.
I'm concerned that nobody in the prison gave you any advice about life outside here, especially about finding a job. Did you ask anybody about that?
Well, like I say, we had like a little class that I had took in like 2013. It was years ago.
But just before you were released, you didn't get any advice about where to go, how to look for a job.
No.
A list of agencies that might help you or anything like that.
No.
So you call me.
Yeah.
How long have you been out now?
About 115 days.
And we're recording this on June 6th, 2018. And since you got out, you told me you found one job.
Yeah.
It was a door-to-door marketing job?
Yeah, it was like some type of sales consultant, like direct marketing job.
What were you selling?
We necessarily weren't selling anything. We was trying to help advise people with their utility bills, with the deregulation of the electric utilities in Maryland. And
mm-hmm.
You have an electric choice supply now, so you can choose who your electric supplier is.
And how long did you last in that job?
2 weeks.
And why only 2 weeks?
Well, one, when I originally was hired, my boss ain't never really asked about my background stuff, and I didn't mention anything. That ought to me was why I was let go, because of my background.
So your background check came in and they told you they had to let you go?
Yeah.
And other jobs that you applied for, what's it been like for you?
Like, some jobs, they don't even contact me back. Like, I didn't put in for a lot of jobs. Like, fortunately, I'm computer savvy and stuff, so I have my resume and everything online and the job alerts and stuff on my phones and everything, but the two interviews that I had prior to that job, both of those spots basically was like, you haven't been home long enough.
Who told you you weren't home long enough?
It was one job that was in Aberdeen, and it was another job that would have been like a truck stop type thing.
A truck stop?
One of them is actually a warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one was, it's like a truck stop place that got like different restaurants. I could have been working for this restaurant.
Okay. And both those places told you hadn't been home long enough?
Yes.
What did you take from that? What does that mean?
What does that mean? Like, how long I got to be home till I got to take care of myself?
Like, almost immediately.
Yeah.
I would think. I would want a job right away. But what they're saying there is, you're fresh out of prison. We can't hire you because you're just too new to the streets. You've been paroled only a few weeks. But isn't the real reason that because of a murder conviction?
It's possible. Like, most,
I mean, don't
like,
you think that's the real reason?
Yeah, most likely, because they claim, like, in Baltimore, well, we got to ban the box. We banned the box. Okay, you banned the box, but you haven't banned Google. You haven't banned...
Yeah, let's talk about that just for a minute. Banning the box means on job applications, there's a little box you're supposed to check if you have a criminal record. And we banned the box, saying to employers, give this person a chance. Don't eliminate them because they checked the box. But there's still Google. They can still look you up. And they're still going to do a background check.
Exactly.
So I have found that with some guys, they get a job, maybe a warehouse job, almost right away. They hire them almost right away. But they're on the job a month, sometimes less. And the background check comes in, and they say, we got to let you go. Even though you've been showing up for work every day, you're a good employee, it looks like, but we can't keep you. Because the company has a policy of not keeping guys who, say, committed aggravated assault, armed robbery, or or a drug dealer, not just a drug user, or in your case, murder. So that's going to be tough for you. So what do you do, Curtis? I mean, what do you say to people who say, Curtis, I'd love to hire you to work in this truck stop. We need someone to sell Cinnabons or something like that. But you committed a murder. That's assuming you can even get to this conversation.
Exactly.
Right? But let's say you did. What would you say?
One thing I'd tell them, I would try to let them see the change. Let them see who I am now. Like, that happened 17 years ago. Like, understand, I can't change it. You know, it is a person's life we talking about. But as callous as this sound, this is Baltimore City. I'm not the first, and I'm not going to be the last.
What 17-year-old who killed someone?
Just this person that might have a murder charge sitting in front of you. That's unfortunate, but that's just the reality of the city that we live in. And it's like, I got to survive out here too. I got to take care of myself too. I don't want to be out here on the corners. I don't want to be trying to rob people or, you know, create more victims. I'm just trying to, you know, right my wrong and move on with my life.
You're living with your mother?
Yes.
And she works?
Yes.
And you want to get going again?
Yeah.
You want to, well, get going for the first time, really, because when you were a kid, the only job you had was selling drugs, right?
Yeah, primarily, yeah.
Yeah. Do you understand the employer who says, I can't hire you because if my other workers or my customers know I hired a convicted murderer, they would be upset?
Yeah, I get that. Like, I get the, you know, the reluctance in that. Like, that's why I'm trying to do my part. Like, I'm just enrolled in school. Like, because, like I say, I'm actually, like, a self-taught financial analyst. So, yes, I'm going to get my certification so I can do what I love doing.
Tell us what you're doing as far as school goes.
Like, I just enrolled in UMUC, and I'm trying to get started. Like, I'm waiting for them to verify all my paperwork and stuff.
UMUC, and what kind of classes? Business classes?
Yeah, finance classes.
Finance. You know, this isn't a bad idea, really, because finding a job might be tough right away. But if you can show people, I came out and I have an interest in accounting, an interest in financial services, I'm taking courses for that. What's your mom's advice? Did your mom talk to you about this?
My mom, she's been there the whole 17 years, so she actually, like, seen it. Like, some other stuff, like when I used to tell her, I need you to buy this book, I need you to go get this book sent to me. Like, she put some of the work in herself, but she probably don't understand it to the degree, because sometimes I might just show her little stock market charts and stuff.
Oh, I understand that. But did she say to you, going to school and live here with me, this is fine for now? Did she say things like that?
It's cool for now, but it's not fine for now. Like, yeah.
No, it's not, but what is your, I'm just, your mom,
she's okay
supporting
with it. Yeah, she's supporting me, yeah. She's supportive and supporting me, but at the end of the day, I'm still a grown man. Like, I'm 35 years old. Like, I gotta be able to fend for myself. Some people don't have moms when they got out of jail. Some people don't have nobody, and like, when they get out, they got all that they got on their back. I just was fortunate.
Sounds to me like if you could find a job, even a part-time job, with someone in the financial world who was willing to give you a chance, and you took classes, that's probably a good scenario for now.
Yeah, like, that's what I've been trying to do now. Like, I've been trying to, like, look for, like, little internships or intern jobs, because basically you got to be enrolled in school for those. Like,
yeah.
I know my work, I know my craft, it's just...
But you know, you need an employer who's willing to give you a chance.
Exactly.
And willing to work with you a little bit.
Exactly.
Right? And that's... You know, that's tough. Some companies have these big policies that are broad brush policies saying we will not hire people who have criminal records.
Yeah.
Or we will not hire people who have criminal records of violence, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're more specific.
I made sure I went and checked the little felony bars and see if I was barred from doing the stuff that I want to do, which I'm not. But yes, I have still a hurdle to climb.
Oh, there's something you can check showing if you have a felony, you couldn't be this, you couldn't be that.
Yeah.
There's kinds of jobs you can't have.
Yes.
Ah, I see. For security clearance or whatever they call it.
Mm-hmm.
But in the financial world.
Yeah, as long as I don't have a breach of trust crime or some theft or something like that.
Yeah. I remember I had a woman who called me. She had committed a fraud as a bank employee.
Exactly.
And she went to federal prison.
Mm-hmm.
And she was still looking for a job with a CPA and an accountancy. Mm-hmm. And in the She just could. They just weren't going to do that.
Yeah, not going to happen.
So I'll give you a chance here, just to say it one more time, or to say it completely. Say I had a financial advisory, or I did taxes for people, financial planning, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Why should I take a chance on you?
Take a chance on me, because I probably can be the best value investment that you probably can have. It's like you about to get something for a bargain.
What am I going to get?
Like, you want to get somebody that knows his work, somebody that has his theoretical practice done. I don't have a lot of experience, but I'm looking for it. I'm ready. Like, I'm like the kid that been driving around this racetrack in his backyard for the last 10 years. The only thing I want to do is go on the Indy 500 now.
Curtis Williams is on parole from his prison sentence for second-degree murder and attempted murder from when he was 17 years old. Now 35, he is looking for a job and hoping to study business and finance and start a career in that field. He presents a tough case, an earnest guy who wants to do the right thing, but facing a big challenge in getting an employer to give him a second chance. If you're interested in getting to know him and helping him, or if you want more information about services for ex-offenders, please get in touch. You can read my Sunday column about Curtis Williams at BaltimoreSun.com. That's our show for now. For my producer, Quinn Kelly, this is Dan Rodericks at the Baltimore Sun. Thanks for listening to Roughly Speaking, and we'll see you again soon.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy welcomes naturalist Gabriel Talent to discuss his debut novel, My Absolute Darling, the story of a young girl's quest for redemption. Wednesday, June 27th at 7 p.m. at the Ivy Bookshop. More at theivybookshop.com or call 410-377-2966.